All right, folks, welcome back to another one-off episode about one of my favorite shows. And as you will soon discover, Colin is not here with me this week. We have someone who is an even more creative podcast namer in his stead. It is, you know him from The Taron Show, among other things. It is Taron Armstrong. Taron, how are you doing?
I'm great. I'm the American replacement, I guess.
Yeah, I really wish I could join the pylon over the podcast name, but I'd be on a bit shaky ground with that, I think.
Yeah. What people don't know is that Colin and Jordan are just endlessly making fun of The Taron Show in one of the group chats that we have, and it's very hurtful.
You're giving away the existence of these secret group chats. What are people going to think?
We have so many, like, what are they called? Offshoots? I don't know.
Splinter groups? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Little do they know, we all have, like, secret ones from each other. It's a whole mess.
Yeah. I thought you would be a good person to invite on to talk about House, not just because you are a big House fan. Is super fan an appropriate term, do you think?
I wouldn't necessarily say that. Like, it's certainly one of the shows that I think has had an impact on my life, more than many others. But it's not like, I watch many shows, and I wouldn't necessarily say I'm a super fan of any of them, except for maybe Big Brother.
But you have rewatched all of House fairly recently, which is more than I think 99% of fans have.
Yeah, that's probably true. So, I mean, basically what happened was House was one of the last shows that I watched, like, not all of the episodes of. So, like, when it was airing, I had a bunch DVR'd and I watched through a lot of the seasons. But there were some episodes I missed. And in fact, I think I missed, like, half of a season at one point, and I just, like, kept on trucking. And then there was a period of time where I stopped watching shows like that and would only watch them from start to finish. And so House was one of the last ones that I didn't do that with. So I was like, you know what? I'm remembering this show that I watched that I never really got like a full grasp of what it was. So I'm going to go back and rewatch everything and rate it properly and all that.
So I thought it would be useful to have you on, firstly, to fill in the details, because I haven't seen, I know I've seen a few episodes here and there. I've rewatched some of my favorites from time to time. But in terms of just watching the show in its totality or watching entire seasons, we're looking at least 4 or 5 years ago now. So a lot of this is fairly blank in my memory at this point. But also, I thought it would be good to have you because you have this entirely undeserved reputation as being like this hyper-rational cyborg. And just, you're like this nice, cuddly, fluffy version of House. So I thought that contrast would be quite nice to have as well.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way to put it, because like I said, you know, this show did have an impact on me when I was growing up, and I really admired House and his philosophy on things, his desire to always be right, and I do think that had an influence on my personality, but I'd like to think I am a little cuddlier.
Yeah, so I imagine the vast majority of the people listening know who you are and are here in part because you're on the show. But for those who don't, can you give us a brief outline, if you like?
Well, basically, like I said, I'm a Big Brother super fan. I joined Rob Has a Podcast to talk about Big Brother as a live feed correspondent. And now I do daily podcasts about Big Brother all summer long. And I really love podcasting. I'm also a video producer, and I do lots of stuff with that as well. But really, and just in general, I'm a lover of all things TV, and I spend a lot of time watching shows, as you might have guessed, because I went back and watched all of House. I have a whole like master list with like various like sub lists about like what I'm going to watch next and how to get through it all. So that's basically me in a nutshell.
Yeah, this is me luring you onto the show under false pretenses and giving you your own version of The Taron Show. I'm interviewing you, turning the camera back around. But you are very enigmatic. You're a man of mystery, and you're not giving much away.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, it's part of the gimmick, I think. You know, The Taron Show, it's all about me discovering other people, and nobody gets to discover me. I let out little tidbits here and there.
Well, we'll tease what we can out of you, I'm sure. But let's get stuck into House then. So I think the best place to start is you're someone who was drawn to the show initially for a reason, like most people were. It was a very popular show during its heyday, less so towards the end, but it still was, I think the ratings were still fine and the critical reception at most points was still pretty good. And I know that a lot of people like strongly identified either with the character of House or just were very drawn to the basic idea and principle behind the show. So what was it about House that really drew you in personally?
The thing for me immediately was that it, like, they examined everything, and I loved that. Like, every single decision someone made was, like, examined by every other character on the show. Like, this is why you did this, because secretly you are feeling this way, and this is why this action means this. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. This is, like, it's not just a bunch of people doing dramatic things. It's a lot of examination, like, figuring out why these things are happening. And that's very much in the House character. Like, his whole philosophy on how he treats things is that he looks at things as a puzzle and he likes to solve them. And that really appealed to me.
And do you think that House does that well? Because I think I agree that that is the kind of motif of the show. That's what House aspires to be. Do you think that House actually succeeds in that goal in practice?
In figuring out people's true motives?
Well, that, and also in his belief that everything can and should be hyper-rational, that, and everything, you know, the truth is knowable, and the best thing that you can do is to know it and to tell other people and insist that they know it as well.
Well, I think ultimately sort of like I certainly when I was drawn to the show, my instinct was like, yes, House, he's right about everything. Like he's got it all figured out. But as I sort of grew up a little more, I was like, well, maybe actually the like feelings are also important. And we shouldn't necessarily ignore them either. And I do think there's for House, part of his character is that he has retreated into this version of himself that is only hyper-rational, even though he does have plenty of irrational feelings. And I think a lot of that is, you know, his coping mechanism to sort of deal with this world that he has trouble relating to and dealing with otherwise. So I don't think that he is always right. And I think that's why he has so many strong characters around him to fill in those flaws. Wilson obviously being the first and foremost of those people.
And that was going to be one of my main questions for this discussion, that we have these very different philosophies on display, both morally, medically, professionally. You have House on one extreme, and then dotted at various other points throughout this space, you have, you know, Wilson, Cuddy, Cameron, other members of his team, other people he interacts with, his patients, this kind of constantly revolving cast of characters. And do you think that within the universe of the show, they are portrayed as these necessary influences that moderate House's worst excesses sometimes, or are they just obstacles to be overcome en route to House's relentless pursuit of the truth?
I think that Wilson was always somebody that that was like a big benefit to House in terms of staying sane and keeping him on the right track. I know a lot of people looked at it, and a lot of people refer to it on the show as well, as Cuddy is the one that's keeping him in check. But I never really saw that. You know, like Cuddy was all like, in my, how I saw it was that Cuddy was almost always wrong about like everything, right? Like she just always had to be overcome. Like what you were saying, like she felt like an obstacle, whereas Wilson was that sort of combination of enabling, but also he'd push back and be an obstacle sometimes too. And so it really felt to me like Wilson was more of like an actual guide, and Cuddy, especially in that last season with Cuddy, became a big obstacle.
Definitely. And I think Cuddy, throughout her tenure on the show, had maybe an exaggerated form of Skyler White syndrome, where she only really appears in the context of the action to stop House from doing what he wants to do, or in Skyler White's case, stop the main character from doing what they want to do and driving the story forward. So you're already not predisposed to be sympathetic towards them. And in Cuddy's case, you know, as you say, she is often shown to be wrong. And if she was right too often, like if House disagreed with Cuddy and ended up killing patients or getting the hospital into legal trouble or himself into professional disrepute, then that can only happen so many times before House's just existence as a doctor becomes completely unbelievable. So it's almost like there's this limiting fact on how useful Cuddy can really be as in that kind of role.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think that was, I do think they dealt with it as well as they could for a really long time. Until the romance plot gets involved.
Well, how much of that do you think was fan service? Because Huddy was a thing way back since season one. I know there were a lot of House fans out there who were hardcore Huddy shippers. Were you one of them? Were you more on the Hammerin side of things? Or were you one of those very weird Hilson people?
I loved Cameron, and I loved the idea of him being with Cameron. Like when I went back and watched that, because I hadn't watched the first season live, and I'd gone back and I watched it, and I liked that idea, but like I knew like it was never gonna work. It's just because I was like had a crush on her that I was like, oh yeah, be with her, House. But then I liked her with Chase, and so that was fine. But yeah, I was never super high on the House Cuddy thing. It really did feel like the fan service-esque nature of it was kind of frustrating. Especially like that was the point in the show where the characters felt really like self-important, and it was like just the fact that House is with Cuddy now was supposed to make us go, whoa. And I never really felt like it never really fully clicked for me that this actually made sense.
Yeah, to me, the storyline was only appealing insofar as I knew that some form of it had to happen, but I knew that it would end badly. And so when it seemed like things were actually going pretty well, it was like, well, I know this can't be maintained for very long, so am I meant to kind of buy into this and go along for the ride? Or is this entire storyline weighted knowing that it surely can't last forever?
Yeah, and I mean, if we want to talk about like their whole relationship, just like it was like every worst part about like a sitcom kind of like if you've watched Peep Show, which is another show I'd love to talk about on a podcast, but if you've watched Peep Show, it's the Peep Show syndrome where it's like nothing will ever go right for the people in Peep Show, and it was the same thing with House and Cuddy, where it's like. This was just never gonna go right. Like they had constant problems that were just nonsense problems that were like you'd expect them to have these kind of relationship problems in like a high school relationship. And you know, so we're like, okay, we're going through this story of House, his learning to become like an actual person, and how like how is he like he's learning how to be in a relationship, and like as he finally gets to the point where he's kind of okay as a person in a relationship, it just kind of is like, well, now what do we do? Cuddy just leaves. That's what we do. I don't know how to inject any more conflict into this.
Yeah, so you had this external concern with Lisa Edelstein wanting to leave the show, I think over salary negotiations, although it was never really made clear after season 7. And so one of the central characters of the show, at the point where it was maybe flagging the most and could use her as this buttress, they had to find a way to write her out, and then she wouldn't even return for the finale, so her presence was sorely missed there. And you can tell just the kind of tonal shift between season 7 and season 8, which in most other regards were fairly similar, but just not having Cuddy there, you could tell what kind of difference that made.
Yeah, and I think I read some of this like trivia in preparation for the podcast. I was not like in the know at the time, so this may or may not be true. But from what I understand, Lisa Edelstein actually left the show after they finished season 7, after they finished shooting season 7, and so David Shore was like, well, now there's no Cuddy. That was not how I wanted to write her off the show, but now, I mean, she's gone now, so nothing we can do about it.
Right, and it's almost as ham-fisted as when Kuttner had to leave the show, when Cal Penn went to work for the Obama administration, and so they had to, they put together this suicide arc for Kuttner just very abruptly, which I think they handled quite well given how sensitive the subject is and given how quickly the turnaround time had to be for that. But it did feel like, you know, that really needed a few episodes of build up to make that as substantial as it deserved to be.
Yeah, you know, the Kuttner suicide was actually really interesting. I think I was watching the show live by that time, and like I was a huge fan of Cal Penn because I was a huge fan of Harold and Kumar, and so I was like really excited to see him on the show, and then that episode really like struck me And I liked the idea that it came out of nowhere, because like that was the first time I was really learning about, like, this is just like how suicide happens sometimes. Like, it comes out of nowhere, and you like all of a sudden it happens, and you don't know why, and you may never know why. And I liked that aspect of it. But I really feel like it was the follow through that left me kind of wanting, where it was like, for a couple of episodes, they were kind of beating themselves up about it. And then we just kind of forgot that he existed until like the finale.
Right. Part of the impact of that was deadened by the fact that we never really connected to Cutner. You know, he was on the show for two seasons by that point, and I think a lot of people made this criticism of that second wave of the House cast, that it really wasn't as engaging as the original crew of Cameron, Chase, and Foreman. And to an extent, it never could be. There was always going to be nostalgia, which would make it impossible for them to live up to those standards. But equally, I think you ask, if you did a poll of 100 House fans, I think very few of them would say, oh, I loved it when, you know, Taub and Cutner and 13 took over. Like, that was a high point of the show for me. And so Cutner leaving was like, well, I guess I'm sad because I'm meant to be sad. That's the point of the episode. But it's not that I'm not sad because I don't get to see Cutner on my screen anymore. There's no direct emotional investment. I also think that arc highlighted the limits of the House formula when it's pushed to its extreme. So often what happens in the course of an episode is you have some kind of medical or ethical dilemma. House will articulate one view, which is often very extreme and expressed in this very disdainful way with little regard for other people, and then you have other members of the team pushing back on that. With suicide as a topic, they kind of had to apply that formula because that's what the show is, but like you knew in advance what House's stance was going to be and what Taub's stance was going to be, and it felt like there was no real discussion of it. It was more just going through the motions in the way that you would expect, and that given how much more the issue deserves, it felt like kind of lacking to me.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I think like when I watched at the time, it was almost in a way like my introduction to that topic, because I'd never really like seen it before on TV to any real extent. And it's never something that I had dealt with in my life or really like even, you know, heard that. Obviously, I knew about the concept, but I never really like explored like what it would mean and how it affects people. So in that regard, I did feel like it was... I was like finding stuff out about this. And this is actually something that that struck me as I went and rewatched this, was this show, in many ways, I was pretty young when I watched it. It was an introduction to many of these topics, to like very serious, intellectually engaging topics to me when I first watched them. And when I went back, it did seem a little, not a little, a lot more simplistic than I remembered in terms of how they addressed many of these topics. Because I remembered it being like such a nuanced show. It had so many interesting takes on things. And then when I went back, it was like, oh, well, actually, this is just like the start of my investigation into this topic. And there's a lot more stuff that could have been explored that wasn't really explored.
And that's a major weakness that I think is highlighted in the later seasons, because at least early on, you had House just being House, but you also had the other cast members acting as a foil to him and expressing these more nuanced opinions and pushing back and giving you other sides of the argument. Later on, when I think the main storylines in terms of the cases and the patients were less interesting, and also the cast members were less engaging, and then you had like Cuddy leaving the show in the final season and so on, there was no one to really act as the anti-House or to kind of place House in any kind of context within that world. It was just everything is about House all the time. And so to the extent that House's takes were simplistic, which of course they were going to be, and that's in part maybe questionable writing, but also just who House is as a character, you were never going to see every side of those stories.
Yeah, and really toward the end of the series was when he needed to be challenged the most. Like he had done crazy things by that point. He had driven a car into Cuddy's house, which is one of my least favorite storylines of the entire show.
Well let's get into that quickly. Why is that? Because that's a criticism you hear a lot, but there just isn't that much House discussion out there in general. So I'm interested to hear you really articulate why.
Well, I mean, the whole storyline from, like, you know, getting together with Cuddy, which, again, felt really like it was fan service more than it was genuine. Like, there were moments where they did it right, and then there were moments where it just felt phoned in. And then the relationship throughout felt like... It almost was like they lost their chemistry the second they got together, and it didn't really ever click for me. And then the reason why Cuddy, you know, breaks up with him is just utter nonsense, and it comes out of nowhere, at least from my perspective. So like that whole storyline had just been built up in a way that I was just like, what is happening? Like, why am I watching this? Like, I don't understand. And then it all culminates into this just, it really just felt like shock value. It really just felt like that's what it felt like to me. Like the only point of this was like, what crazy thing is House going to do next? Can you believe that Cuddy drove House into driving a car into her house? It didn't feel like it was consistent with House's character, really. I mean, he'd always been self-destructive. He'd always been even destructive toward other people, but not in such a, like, actually physically destructive way.
Yeah, you always got the sense with House that he was abrasive. He was very, you know, he often did not take the approach you would want him to take, but he was never fundamentally malicious. He was not putting people in danger, except insofar as a diagnostician, he had to as part of his job. But this felt like House was just being a dick. Like House was going outside the kind of moral boundaries, the very loose moral boundaries that the show had set for him. And so to the extent that anything feels unrealistic on House, that did feel like it was overstepping the mark. I want to go back quickly to this issue of House's romantic interest, because I think Stacy, who we see in part of season one and then as the kind of lead, if you like, in this extended arc in season two, I think she was an example of a romance storyline done well. You know, we see this interesting tension between her and House, this history between them that's alluded to, and then they kind of they're in this uneasy professional coexistence. They try to make it work, but it's very clear that it's not going to work, and so that kind of ends in a way that you would expect. And similarly with Cameron, I mean, she does have this crush on House, and you have this interesting contrast between their two personalities, where she finds them just rude and unprofessional and immoral or amoral at times, and yet she still has this fascination with him that she is struggling to grapple with. And that it felt a little bit dodgy, but still I thought it was quite interesting. The Cuddy thing just really lacked a lot of that power to me, even though I knew it was eventually going to be one of the main storylines of the show. And I think in general, the fact that every woman the House meets in the context of his professional life seems to fall in love with him, you know, I think it would be useful if he had some kind of female foil, if there was someone who did just find his method and his personality repulsive and wanted nothing to do with him.
Yeah, and I think, you know, part of what it was in those earlier seasons was that they, you know, they intentionally made this like dichotomy between House being an ass and, like, first of all, I've never heard like the phrase ass, like you're an ass, be used more often than in House. I don't know why they constantly, every single character says, man, House is an ass. I don't really understand why that happened.
Maybe it's a New Jerseyism circa 2004.
Maybe I kind of, toward the end of the series, I was like, maybe they're meaning asshole, and they can't say that on network TV.
He's louder than that. He's the whole ass, you know.
Yeah. They created this dichotomy between House being like this massive ass, and then also like, they had to sell him on the audience, right? Like the audience had to buy into this character and like him. And so they did a lot of work to be like, there might be a hint of humanity here, or like, you know, it's abrasive, but it makes sense. It makes logical sense. And he is right all of the time. And so when he had these romantic interests, like with Stacy, like you could see why she fell in love with him. Like they sold that to you very well. And the same sort of thing with Cameron, even though that made a little less sense, you could see why Cameron would fall into that trap. But by the time he gets with Cuddy, I think the show just expects you to be like, well, yeah, of course she'd love House. Who wouldn't love House? We all love House. And they kind of like just, they lost that narrative. They stopped selling him to the audience. And that's why I don't think it worked quite as well. And it's also like, they also took it for granted, like, when she breaks up with him, it's like, well, of course she did, because he's House. They didn't really sell why she would do that. It all felt very arbitrary.
Yeah, you know those two events had to happen at some point, so they didn't need to do the work of filling in the in-between, because
exactly. Why
would they? And it's telling that I felt more engaged by the Stacey story arc over the course of 7 or 8 episodes than I did with the whole Huddy thing over the course of 7 seasons.
And
that's speaks to its ultimate failure, I think. Let's go back to this issue of House's personality or philosophy and how that informs the show at large, because I think... we talk about House being this hyper-rational character, or at least aspiring to be this hyper-rational character, and I think his big blind spot is that if you're ignoring the importance of emotions on how people act and how people should act, then you aren't acting rationally. You don't have an accurate model of how people engage with the world and how to get them to do what you want them to do. And I think one of the issues with House is that the formula is always the same. It's some patient shows up who has these moral reservations about doing a certain thing, or they're trying to cover something up. And House, by being this battering ram who doesn't take no for an answer, doesn't sugarcoat anything, is eventually able to break down those barriers and get them to divulge what he needs them to divulge. And it always works. It's very rare that that approach just turns someone off in a way that jeopardizes them solving the case, or that House realizes, well, you know, maybe if I mix up my act a bit, if I try to be a little bit more sympathetic, then maybe that's going to get some better results here. It's a kind of one-note thing that always has the same outcome. And sometimes you take this circuitous route to get there. Maybe Cameron pushes back, or Foreman goes under House's nose to try and do something else. But you know ultimately what's going to happen, and the House is going to solve the case. Or that in the rare event that House doesn't solve the case, it's not going to be because his approach failed. It was inevitable or whatever.
Yeah, I feel like this was another sort of like messy aspect of House's character, even though I do think he is a very, very well-realized character and probably one of the best characters that has been on network TV, at the very least, for a long time. I think this is a messy aspect of it, because it really did feel like there were two separate parts. There was like House, the master manipulator, who really would like set up these situations, and watch on as his team members like did something because he pushed them into it, and like even though they knew he was manipulating them, they still fell for the trap because he was so in tune with what they were thinking and how to manipulate them. And then there was the other side of him, which was this battering ram that would like consistently fail, and like you see it in the finale, the series finale, where like he's trying to manipulate Foreman and Wilson into like getting him out of going to jail so that he can hang out with Wilson in his final months, and like he just does it terribly. Like as soon as he gets them to agree, he's like, yeah, I thought you would. And then they're like, wait a minute, you just manipulated me. No, I'm not going to do this. And like, it really felt like it was inconsistent whether or not he was this like master Machiavellian manipulator, or he was the, I think, flawed character that he should have been all of the time, which was very hyper-rational, almost always right, but can't necessarily figure out like how to present things in the right way, and is missing some key details in terms of emotions and how to approach things in that way.
I agree that House is a very well realized character, and part of that is he does have this duality to him. So even as he is super intent on being this hyper rational character, he also is a very emotional person at times, and he mm-hmm. allows that to affect his actions. But often what you see is the tension between those two sides of him always ends up with House has to overcome his emotions in order to get back to that rational side of him, which ends up solving the case. It's never, you know, House gives into his emotions for a time and that ends up working well for him. It always ends up causing him more pain or more tragedy in some way. So it's, for as much as there are these different sides to House, I think it's clear in terms of the show's own message which side we're meant to relate to more and root for, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think that's a running theme throughout the entire series, is that, you know, genius can cause unhappiness. I think, you know, there are many times throughout the series where it's like, That House needed both of those things. He needed to be unhappy. He needed to be rational, and that being rational could cause him to be unhappy, and that like being in pain even could cause him to be unhappy. But all that also helps him with his ability to solve puzzles. Like when he briefly like heals his leg, it's like, oh, am I losing my edge? And there are times. One of the episodes that stuck with me more than any of the others when I watched it as a kid was the episode where that he's treating like a patient who is basically like a genius who has been downing like paint thinner or something, I don't remember what it was, to like dumb himself down in order to be happier, and so that he could like relate to his girlfriend and like just live a happier life, even though he wasn't smart anymore, because when he was smart he was unhappy, he was lonely. And I feel like they really try to get that message across throughout the entire series, and I do appreciate the fact that they never go down that trap of like, all right, House has finally realized that what he needs to do is just like be a fluffier person, and that means that he can be happy, because I don't think that's in him. I think that he tries to at one point, and it doesn't work out exactly the way he wants it to, because it's not clear cut enough, it's not rational enough, and so he's kind of stuck in this mode, and I like that about House.
And one thing that I think makes House such an appealing character is that he is every like angst-ridden teenager, but just in a more grown-up form. And I know that I, as like a 13-year-old watching House for the first time, identified with him a lot more than I wish I had done in retrospect. Like, it is
right.
It's you know, I saw him not as like a role model, but just as, you know, as someone who, within the context of the show, like he was this, you know, misunderstood genius or whatever. He was someone who was rough emotionally or didn't have that side of him very well developed, but who was able to get results and was able to think through things rationally, and that's all he needed to achieve his goals. And I think for a lot of people in that stage of their lives, or for a lot of people with that mindset in general, that's a very appealing storyline to sell them, right? That's what they are trying to get out of their lives and maybe not succeeding at that time.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, to this day, that's still my favorite kind of character in fiction. Like, I mean, you know, when I've always been into video games, into fantasy, the fantasy genre and sci-fi and all that. And part of that is because I loved immersing myself in some other world. But as I've, you know, grown older, like the idea of like putting myself in another role where I get to be a hero or something is less appealing, because it's like, whatever, I actually like my life now. I'm not unhappy like I was before. I don't need to escape into some world. But there is still part of me that enjoys the idea of like the mastermind, or the person that's just like, he's so smart, he's always right. Or this person like the little fingers of the world, the House. You know, one of my favorite characters in fiction is Kellis from the Prince of Nothing series, just like masters of their domain. I really enjoy that archetype. And I think it still stems from that childhood like giddiness about like, yes, he's so smart. He doesn't matter about anything else. He can just outsmart everyone.
And this, I think, goes back to what you said earlier about the House's philosophy being quite simplistic when you take a step back and think about it, that everything has this very reductive explanation, that it's always the most cynical or the most self-interested interpretation of someone's actions that is the true guide to what they're doing and why they're doing it. But it's, you know, that has to be true in order for you to be acting rationally, right? Like if you're wrong about that, and you have this incorrect idea about what their motivations are, then you're going to make bad decisions, whether that's as a doctor, whether that's in a game like Survivor or Big Brother, or just in life when you're trying to connect with them or get what you want from them. And I think House takes it as a given that of course everybody lies, and of course this kind of radical honesty almost would be a better motto for everyone to live by, but it's, with a few exceptions, that's not really challenged in any fundamental way.
Yeah, House is like the character on Survivor that's like a complete game bot, but then also manages to win the game, right? Like he's everything that I want to see on Survivor, where it's like, yes, you can have somebody that's like a Kim Spradlin who is able to just like be so immensely likable and manipulate people on a much more subtle, in a much more subtle way. But then there's also like the, say like a Tony, who is just like a crazy person who is I mean, Tony's not the best example, but like maybe even like a Boston Rob, who's just like so much more game body and is going to like just manipulate people through, you know, actual tactics, more than like social manipulation. And like, that's so much fun to watch. And obviously the other thing is fun to watch as well. But like, the reason why I got into these shows, like Survivor and Big Brother, is to see the game body aspect of it, and to watch somebody try to be a Machiavellian, like a chess master kind of figure. And that's definitely how House sees himself. And I think that's how the creators and the writers see him as well.
Yeah, and for that to be compelling in the long term, those characters have to fail sometimes. It can't have a 100% success rate. And of course, House has some episodes where he doesn't do so well, or some cases that he isn't able to solve ultimately. But over the broad sweep of his career on the show, he does pretty damn well. And I think the show is about House, so of course it's going to focus on him. But in real life, for every House who is this misunderstood genius who ends up like blazing his own path and doing his own thing, there are 20 other like wannabe Houses who just turn people away with the way they treat people, and who maybe do have that potential in them but can't realize it because they alienate everyone with their own actions. And it's, you know, I think you could have a show that was maybe more realistic in that regard, but it would be a pretty bad TV show, I think. It just wouldn't be as interesting to watch.
Yeah, like House gets fired after two episodes.
Yeah,
and that's about it.
The entire show is cancelled and it becomes Chase MD instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go into some of the seasons and the episodes, because I think we're both in agreement that the show starts very strong, and that kind of classic vintage House is what keeps us engaged and keeps us describing ourselves as House fans. And then somewhere between there and the end of the series, it takes a pretty substantial turn for the worse. So do you think that there are clear eras of the show that you can distinguish between, and where does that decline start for you?
I think that, you know, you have the first three seasons, which are, you know, largely like that first team. It eventually breaks up, and then we get that shortened. I believe it was the fourth season, right? The fourth season was shortened.
Because you had the writer's strike taking place.
Yes, and that's when they really, you know, get the new team in place. And so I feel like that was sort of a middle point. And then there's that second team, which is like the fifth and sixth season. And then they really just kind of have like a cycle of like people that they cycle through with those fifth and sixth and seventh and eighth seasons, where but I do feel like there was a distinction between I feel like. All right, so let me start that over.
Sure.
I feel like the first three seasons are like the vintage House, right? Like, you get the original team. That's like, you know, you get the origin of House. You have the breakup of the team and everything that goes along with that. And then you have this like weird intermediary, like fourth season that's a shortened season. And he finds a new team. And then we have like kind of like one more season of that. And then I feel like that's when it really starts to go downhill in terms of like it gets very soap opera-esque and self-important. And then we have like the final season is sort of almost on a thing of its own, just because, you know, Cuddy's gone and so many things are different at that point. But that's sort of how I see the structure of the series.
Okay. So do you think that initial cast that we have for the first two seasons, and then most of the third season as well, were they actually more compelling as characters, or was it just nostalgia that's clouding our judgment there? And if it had been Taub and 13 and Cutner, or maybe Amber, if you work her in there from the start, we would be loving them instead and thinking, oh, I'm not quite sure about this Chase guy. Or given how prone we are to be clouded by nostalgia, is it impossible to answer that question at all?
I think it's nostalgia, actually. Like, I remember feeling that way when I originally watched the series, but when I watched it again, when I did my rewatch, I actually found that I liked the second team a lot as well. I actually, you know, knowing Cutner's full arc, I was able to appreciate him a little more, you know, from the beginning, and try to like look for clues as to like why he ultimately, you know, kills himself. You know, 13 wasn't quite as annoying to me as she was when I first watched. She just had this like this all-knowing sort of attitude all the time that annoyed me when I first watched. But I could also sort of track her storyline there. And and I love Taub. I think Taub is a great character.
I like Taub.
Yeah. So I appreciated that that team. I think they did pretty well, and I think that they managed to introduce new characters, each had their own sort of personality. Some of them didn't last long enough for me. I don't even remember her name. But the girl, basically the two women for the final season, there just wasn't enough room for them to breathe, I think, to like really get acquainted as like proper teammates. But I think for the most part, most of the new team members each were like just as good and well defined as the originals.
Yeah, stop erasing Park, Taron. She was a true TV sensation.
Park, yes. I literally was just watching this and I forgot her name.
It did strike me that in the series finale, which is also the season 8 finale, Park just never really appears. Like it's taken as read that you don't actually care about Park. You want to see House and Wilson, of course, and then Chase and Cameron and Foreman as much as we can fit them in, and then we can put Tab in there too, and then Park is just non-existent basically. It's like she never even had a place on the show. But I think the second cast of that I think is headlined by Taub does suffer from, firstly, you have this abridged fourth season where I think it was something like 16 episodes instead of the usual, is it 24, 23, something like that?
Yeah, 24.
And then also part of that was taken up by this Survivor-style audition process, which I thought was quite interesting in its own right. But it meant that the cast was so cluttered at times that those characters never really got a chance to shine or define themselves. And you could say that Tab got a winner's edit, maybe. You can say that some of them stood out more than others. And it was pretty clear that Amber, for instance, was going to be there for the long haul in some capacity. But it left you with, by the end of the fourth season, you kind of know about them. And then going into the fifth season, it's like, okay, this is the new reality that I'm adjusting to. And just as you're maybe starting to like them, Kartner gets killed off. And now we go into season 6 where like Cameron and Chase are coming back again, and it just feels, and by the time that happens, I wasn't even that big a fan of Cameron and Chase anymore in their new roles on the show. It felt like some kind of weird crossover episode or some weird reunion episode where all of these characters are shadows of their former selves, and you don't have that tension and those dynamics that we had that made those first seasons so interesting. And so we end up it going to season 6 when Cameron and Chase get divorced. I was much less interested in that than I was in their initial fling back in season 2 and season 3.
Yeah, that annoyed me. I wasn't a fan of that storyline. But you know, this may be a hot take, but season 4 is actually my favorite season of the show, especially going back and rewatching it. You know, I think the writer's strike ruined a lot of shows, but for my money at least, like, I think the fact that it was shorter really helped it. It let it be a lot more structured and focused. I obviously, being a fan of Big Brother and Survivor, I really liked that that concept of him running through you know, all these contestants, so to speak. And I think House is like a perfect figure for that. And I liked being introduced to all these new characters, and the fact that any one of them could just like leave in any given episode. I thought that was kind of fun. So I actually really liked that. And going into season 5, I liked that season as well. It was really season 6 and 7 that were the weakest for me. And I think you're right. Like, that's when they sort of like they buckled on it. Like they bring back Chase and Cameron and you know, in such a weird way. And that was when it started to feel like, oh, remember Chase and Cameron? You must like them so much because of your nostalgia. Well, we're just going to use them as pieces instead of as actual like characters with you know, flaws and interests and all of that.
Yeah, and you have Foreman, of course, as this constant presence throughout. But I think he is maybe the best illustration of how the show has changed over time. So in the first few seasons, he was like this independent unit with his own views, his own mentality, and you could quite clearly see his role as this contrast with Hal, someone who I think David Shaw described him quite well as someone who thought he was House, but he wasn't. Foreman thought he wasn't House, but he was, whereas Chase thought he was House, but he wasn't. And you could see that dynamic playing out quite well. But then later on, if you flash forward 5 seasons later, you just didn't really have that. It was, okay, Foreman is there in the room. He is saying words, but he isn't engaging in the way that made us all love him way back when.
Yeah, Foreman's character really just got, you know, just rolled over by a truck. I think Cuddy leaving really accelerated that too. But even before that, it was really like he was the last person you would have expected to be brought back on the team, right? Like, and that was part of his arc, was that he was basically like broken down because he goes to try to, you know, be his own man, and he becomes what we described earlier, which is just like he just gets fired on day two. So he has to work for House. But even then, it just never really worked the same way. Like, he kept being put in positions where it was like, oh, well, I'm better than the rest of them. Like it was good that he thought that when he wasn't, but when he actually was, it was just like, they were just constantly just like trash talking him, and he was constantly losing, and he never really has a good moment, after, you know, his initial arc in the first three seasons.
Yeah. You said that you liked season four because it had a greater sense of structure to it. And but I'm curious what you think about both the Vogler arc from season one and then the Tritter story arc from season three, both of which are attempts by the showrunners to introduce these villains into the show. Because House doesn't really have a villain to oppose him. He has Cuddy, who is doing her job. You know, she's the Dean of Medicine. She's a sympathetic figure. You know, he has this back and forth relationship with members of his team, but there's no just force of evil in the context of the show for him to really go against. And I think Vogler and Tritter were meant to be that. And I've heard some backlash against them, saying that that just doesn't really match the idea of the show and what House is about. But I really enjoyed both of those arcs, and I'm now wondering if that's because I liked them for who they were, or because they just added a much needed sense of structure to the show.
I liked the idea of structure. I think my favorite structured element was the in season one, the unveiling of how House became who he is, with his leg and everything, and his ex-wife. That was one of my favorite structured elements. And I did like that they'd introduced these like little mini storylines. But I have to say, I am in agreement with the idea that I wasn't a huge fan of the introduction of a villain into the storyline. That really never really worked for me. Like, House is kind of supposed to be our villain, right? You're like, in many ways, he is the villain and the hero. And to have somebody who like directly opposes him, like it never really works. Like, you have to make them like an even bigger bastard than House, like Vogler was, in many ways, or like just like somebody who you're like, well, just why are you doing this? Like, I forget the other guy's name, the cop.
Tritter,
yeah. Him in particular, he just annoyed me. Like, who is this person, and why is he so obsessed with House? Like, this makes no sense to me.
Tritter, not to be confused with Twitter, where everyone also has a giant thermometer stuck out their ass from time to time.
It brought this level of like this tension into the show that I wasn't a huge fan of. I can't say I'm a huge fan of those storylines in particular, but I did like when they would introduce like short like little arcs. I feel like toward the end of the series they really ran through those too quickly. House and his, you know, green card wife arc, and and all of that, like that was too far. Like, I like they had a little bit of space in those previous ones. But yeah, I mean, I just in general, I will always have a problem with like 24 episode seasons, because I think it's too many to tell a coherent story. And I think that the that sort of procedural nature of the show is one of the weaker aspects of it. I think it's one of the best procedural shows that have been made, honestly. But I still think that despite that, it is kind of a weak format to begin with. And it's hard to really tell like good stories with a procedural sort of element, I think.
And that's one thing to be said for a lot of British TV in particular, which has very short seasons, which are often quite self-contained, in that they clearly know from the outset what they want to be doing, and they build towards that in a very measured and structured way. And you know, some of those are better or worse than others, but you often don't have this kind of lull in the middle of a season that you have, especially with these long procedural seasons. And that's, I think, House's fundamental challenge as a show, that, you know, the idea is people don't change. Everyone has this fundamental quality to their character that you can distill it down to. And yet you have these characters who, in some cases, like House, Foreman, and so on, and Wilson, who are going to be there throughout. And so how do you show how those people change and go through these episodes in their life over the course of 8 seasons without it just becoming stale and predictable. And I think they address that in some cases much better than others. So the character of House, for instance, was still very compelling to me 8 seasons in. It was so deep and so layered, and Hugh Laurie is so fantastic in that role that I could have watched another 10 seasons of House MD if it was just House, right? Whereas some of the others just kind of fell off a cliff in the middle of season 4, season 5 and never really recovered from that.
Yeah, and it's just too many episodes. Like, I think that's one of the biggest criticisms that people have of House. Like, when people remember House, they often remember, like, oh, is it Lupus? Or is it like, or it's like, oh, it's, you know, we're going to try out this method. Here's our diagnosis. We're going to come up with one, and then we're going to treat them, and it's going to make things worse. And then we're going to come up with another, and we're going to treat them, and it's going to make things even worse. And there's going to be some sort of personal drama happening that relates to the case somehow. And then by the end of it, we're, House is going to come up with a miraculous, epiphany.
How's it going to stop mid-sentence while berating someone and gaze slowly towards the camera? And that's going to be the big eureka moment.
Yeah, it became very formulaic, and I think that's one of the main things that people remember about the show. And I think that cut the seasons in half, take out like half of these stories, focus a little more on making them a little more detailed, a little less surface level, and compress the stories that you tell throughout 24 episodes into those 12 episodes, and I think you have a really, really like a much better show, to be honest. Not that House wasn't good, but I think it could have been much better if they had done that.
Yeah, let's talk about the role of medicine on the show as it ties into that, because when you're building a procedural show, you have the central cast of characters and all the interpersonal drama between them. You have some of these long-term or maybe medium-term story arcs, and then the day-to-day variety between episodes is provided by whatever whoever the patient is on House, whoever the victim is on CSI, things like that. And that really has to be compelling in order for the show itself to remain compelling. And I think there's a fundamental struggle when that topic is medicine that the audience just doesn't know anything about it, really. So for the vast majority of the audience, those medical details, all of those conversations of them saying, oh, well, it can't be a myocardial infarction because of X, Y, and Z, that's just, at best, it's background noise, and at worst, it's a distraction from the characters that drive the show and what keep the show interesting. And often those medical debates or medical situations are only interesting insofar as they highlight those characters and give them a chance to breathe. And I think in that sense, it's different from a show like CSI where, okay, nobody knows about the actual details of fingerprinting or DNA analysis or whatever either, but the basic idea of chasing criminals and solving the mystery has this universal appeal. And I don't know that House or medicine in general necessarily has that. And that's why, okay, you have these shots of like people fainting and the machines making these weird noises and blood suddenly gushing from every available orifice just to liven up the drama. But in terms of connecting with the subject matter, it's kind of hard to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, House is largely like the idea of House, the character, was based on Sherlock Holmes. And when you're talking about like a murder mystery, the audience can be involved. They can be, I think this person did it, and this might be how they did it. But with medicine, it's like you can't be like, oh, I think they actually have, you know, cardial epheritis, or I who knows, like I just made that up. You know what I mean? Like you have, like, any time that House comes up with the solution, nobody except for like a doctor will even know what that solution was in the first place. So it's very hard to follow along. And that's, again, I feel like they did a much better job in the early seasons because they spent a lot of time on the details, and they'd often like have little graphics to show you like this is what's happening inside their body, like this is what's going wrong with them. And then I feel like over the course of time, they just get bored with that, or maybe they feel like the audience gets bored with that. And I think this happens with a lot of shows. I mean, we could talk about Game of Thrones and like the drastic difference in detail between season 1 and season 7. But even like by the finale of the series finale of House, he literally says, as he's telling the story to like these figments of his imagination, of what happened during the case, he's just going blah 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 blah. Nobody cares about the medicine anyway.
Yes,
and yeah.
I noted that down because I was rewatching the series finale to prepare for this, and I noted down that quote of House telling the like the Cutner hallucination that no one cares about the medicine, and that's a pretty salient commentary on the show itself. Like the medicine is not why you're here, and if it is why you're here, I wonder if that even makes it better, because I know that there was this blog called Polite Dissent, which I think sadly has been taken down now, where it went through episode by episode with a doctor, like detailing all of the medical inaccuracies and all the details and so on. And I wonder if you are a med student or a doctor and you're watching the show and you see these things which don't really make sense, or where like one thing wouldn't actually lead to another, would you be able to remove that distraction and still immerse yourself in the show? Because I feel like you have to not care about that kind of thing for the show to make sense still.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know, like, because when I started watching again, when I started my rewatch, I found myself very interested in the medical cases for, like, throughout the first couple of seasons. I remember being like, oh, like, actually interested in the, not only the characters of, like, the patient character, but what was wrong with them and how they were solving the problem. Because, like, that was part of the puzzle, was like, no, I couldn't try to guess what was wrong with them, but I could follow along why, like, the thought process behind the diagnosis. And that was kind of fun for me. But as the series went on, I, like, just found myself, and again, whether this is the writing or whether it was me following the natural progression of you know, what the writers went through or what the audience went through at the time, but I would just find myself completely just like blanking over any scenes with the patient, and would only really like even register what was happening in terms of like the drama with House and the team or whatever storyline was happening alongside that. And I just, like, there are tons of episodes where I'm like, where he solves the case, I'm like, wait, who is this patient again? I don't even remember, even though I've been watching this episode. And again, I don't know if that's because of the writing or because just like over the course of time that happened to me, but I really felt like they spent more time and more detail in the early seasons.
And some of the episodes I think are good, or which I would call my favorite, I can't even remember most of what was happening with a patient or what the case was or what the eventual solution ended up being. It was more about the character moments that happened outside of the operating theater, if you like. And I think some of the truly best episodes on House are where the case and the character drama are able to be integrated in this very tightly knit way, either because the medicine involves one of the main characters, so that two-parter in season two where Foreman is the patient and they have to save him from mm-hmm. death, I thought that was one of the best best episode sets of the show, because you were drawn to what was happening with Foreman. It wasn't just the medicine, it wasn't some like random old guy being stuck in the room, it was Foreman, and you care whether he lives or dies.
And great performance too there.
Yeah, fantastic. And that's why I think you look at a lot of the season finales, whether it's the season two finale, the season four two-parter, which I think for a lot of people is are the best episodes of the entire series, where Amber ends up dying. It's where you have a personal connection to these issues. I mean, even the season one finale, where like it's Mark, who you don't know, but you know that he's Stacey's husband, so you know that it's going to be awkward for House. That is what keeps me interested, and obviously you can't do that every single episode, but when you can, I think you really have to make the most of it. And to their credit, they often do.
Yeah, I mean, I think they sort of recognize that, and I think that like another somewhat similar show in terms of medicine, at least, ER, sort of fell into the same trap, where it was like for a long time, when you'd watch ER, the early seasons, it was just about the medicine and the characters, and that was very interesting. And then as time went on, you sort of get bored with the day-to-day, and so they'd have these big events like, oh, there's a stabbing in the hospital, or oh, Dr. Green just got beat up, like and then as time went on, like, it just became like, well, we're just waiting for the next big dramatic thing to happen. And yeah, I feel like that's what House became.
I heard that on Grey's Anatomy recently, one of the big plot lines was that the hospital blew up, and you can only have that happen every so often, right? You can't every other episode just have the hospital just exploding into smithereens.
Well, thank God ER never got that far.
Well, quite. I think House kind of I won't say quit while it was ahead, but certainly quit before it had to blow hospitals up in order to keep itself exciting.
Yeah,
which I guess we can be thankful for.
Yeah, and like you know, obviously a show like ER, it fell a lot further than House did. Like I'm being extra critical of House because I think it was sort of on another level. Not, I mean, ER is also one of my favorite shows, but I mean, man, by season 9 or 10, it was just like it had really gotten into the dumps there. So yeah, I feel like House did get out. I honestly, they probably followed a pretty similar like layout in terms of like there were still some great moments towards the end of ER's good run, like in season 7 and 8, but it really was like 9 and 10 where it really just went downhill, and I feel like House did get out right in time.
Yeah, we talk about House like this because we do enjoy it and because it does lend itself to that kind of critical analysis in a way that shows that have less depth of them just simply wouldn't. But that issue, I think, is why I find a lot of the clinic scenes a lot more engaging than the main plots of the episodes, because it is character driven. It's not what is this medical mystery that I know nothing about. It's I'm meeting this patient for the first time and they have this like funny interaction with House, and that's what sticks in your memory ultimately. And I think the showrunners, or the showrunners if you prefer, recognize this, because there's this quote from David Shore in his AMA on Reddit where he said, quote, creative usually comes up first with the storyline with a specific ethical dilemma, and we ask one of our doctor consultants how we can make that work in the real world. They say we can't, and we just rephrase until they say yes. So it's starting with what is this about fundamentally, and not what is the medicine, you know, what are the medical issues surrounding this?
Yeah, and that's another thing where I feel like they used up all of the good ones in the first like 5 seasons.
Right.
And then like by season 8, you're like, oh, this guy, he didn't have a lot of testosterone and that made him more like a woman. And now that he's getting more testosterone, he's acting more like a man. So maybe he doesn't want as much testosterone, which is like a bastardized version of like many of the more interesting stories that they had. Like one of the ones that really stuck out to me, especially when I watched as a kid, was the man who essentially lost the filter in his brain and just started speaking his mind constantly. And so like he basically tells his wife, who he'd been all like very supportive of, like, I think your job is like a waste of time, and like I think your causes are like terrible, and like, you know, he's basically just telling her like all of his innermost thoughts. And that concept of like he has no filter, is he telling people what he really believes, or is that filter part of who he is? And so these like inner thoughts don't really represent who he is, but it's hard to like conceptualize that. Like, that was such an interesting idea to me, and it really stuck with me for a long time. And I mean, of course, going back and watching it again, like as I mentioned, it was a bit more of a simpler take than I remembered, but it was still like, it was really interesting and it was really thought provoking. And I feel like they did kind of lose that throughout the show.
So which episodes would you say stand out as your favorites? Having watched the show initially and then having rewatched it more recently, what are the ones that still stand the test of time for you?
Well, I mean, like certainly that one and the one that I mentioned about like the smart guy who doesn't want to be smart. Any of these ones that are like you think you get what you want, or like you think you're curing yourself, but then really like maybe you don't want that. That was always interesting to me. There was also another one with the guy, and this was definitely a later season. This might have been season 8. The guy that cheated on his wife, and then ultimately starts telling like a bunch of lies, and then is, you know, he's faced with that decision, like, should you tell her now that she knows that all of the other things were lies, that this was also a lie, or should you tell her the truth? And that they sort of explored that. And again, like watching it back, that one didn't really hold up, but it stuck with me at the time, so I'd still point it out as like one of the ones that stood out to me. Obviously, the Kuttner suicide episode was something that I really struck me at the time. I think the in season 1, what was it called? Three Stories.
Yes.
When it's revealed that the story of how House became who he is. I think that was an amazing episode, probably the best episode of House as a whole. Then obviously the one you pointed out with Amber, Wilson's heart and House's head. That two-parter, and and the one you mentioned about with Foreman,
Euphoria. Yeah,
yes, that was good. I'm sure I'm missing some, but those are some of the ones that like really stick out to me.
Yeah, I think all of those would be on my list. I guess as you go towards the later seasons, it's mostly just the ones that have those big moments in them, whether it's like the season finales or the series finale. But outside of that, there's no like mid season 6 episode or whatever that has really stuck with me over time.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's, like I said, like that's sort of the problem, where like they eventually got to the point where it's like they needed big dramatic things to happen, you know, like it's an issue of scale, I think, with a lot of TV shows, where it's just like, you know, especially if you're talking about like saving the world kind of things, it's like, oh well, once you've saved the universe, like what more can you do? And it's sort of the same thing with dramas sometimes, where it's like, once you have, you know, House drive into a home, like, where do you go from there? How is there another, like, once House is shot in the middle of the hospital, like, what more can you do to him? Like, I guess we'll dive more into his addiction. Oh, now he's arrested, he's in jail, like, he's like, this, now we have like a prison episode, he's been to rehab, like what more can you do to House? Like, there really isn't much more you can do that can match up to the stakes that you've already raised.
Exactly. What did you make of that rehab two-parter to open season 6? Because I've seen some people attribute that to where the show ultimately jumped the shark.
Yeah, that really did feel like a turning point to me. It felt very formulaic in terms of like it felt like they were reaching for like this. It felt like a very stereotypical rehab story, or like an insane asylum kind of story, and it had very common tropes. It felt like they were genre bending, but in a way that like it didn't really work for me. It was cool to occasionally see House in like these kind of different stories, because he's such an interesting character, and I feel like that's why it still kind of worked, because it was House and not just some random person. But it still felt so cliche, you know what I mean? And it really brought this much more dramatic side of the show into light. It really just kicked it off in that way. And then, you know, we can also talk about like the prison story arc, which was very similar to me, where it was like a very stereotypical prison storyline, like, oh, you know, he's getting, you know, threatened by prisoners, and he's got to make deals, and like it's just like, you know, it doesn't really work. Like, Oz did it better, you know what I mean? Or like, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest did it better. You don't need to try to match those. Like, you have your own thing, and when you try to do something else, it just doesn't really work for me.
Yeah, so to me, that season 5 finale, which I thought was excellent, would also have been a great ending point for the show. Like, if that had been the series finale, you would be curious to see what happened to House, but ending on that note would have been perfect. Like, you would have some kind of closure as well. And if that had been, you know, if when we talk about House, we had been talking about those 5 seasons as the show's entire run, I don't know if I would feel any regret over missing, you know, season 6, season 7, season 8.
I completely agree. I mean, I think that, you know, season 8 was a little bit of a step above season 6 and 7 just for me, but I wouldn't have missed it. You know, I wouldn't have missed any of it, to be honest. I liked getting to see Chase take over as head diagnostician. I would have liked to see that. But other than that, you know, I just really didn't care for the rest of it. And that really was a good ending. Like, because it wasn't that like House has finally conformed, or he's finally like grown, really. It was that he was broken. He finally got completely broken, and like, can he be fixed? Can he like get to a point where he can be unbroken? Maybe he can, maybe he can't. We'll never really know. And I feel like that would have been a good end point.
Yeah, and at the end, there was no bravado, there was no like perfect witticism, there was no snark. It was, you could tell House was scared, and he knew that he was in serious trouble, and he was finally making the decision that I think he knew on some level for a long time he had to make. And that I think that would be a good note to close on. Let's talk about the note that they actually closed on with the season 8 finale, the series finale, Everybody Dies, which had a somewhat mixed reception at the time, and I'm curious what your take was on the whole thing.
I thought it was pretty terrible. I have to say, I feel like I liked the concept of it, I guess, but I really wasn't a fan of just like it really like in Sherlock Holmes, you know, yeah, Sherlock Holmes, there's many a time where people fake their death. And even in Sherlock Holmes, I'm not a huge fan of that storyline. It just seems so far-fetched to me. And the idea that, like, they've gone this far, like, it didn't strike me in the right way. I liked that they tried to tie in all the loose ends in terms of, like, the, you know, they bring Cameron back, they bring Stacy back. That was fun. Even Cutner and Amber. But the way that they did that too was kind of like, I don't know, like he's talking to like apparitions, like that didn't really hit me the right way. So, I mean, I don't know. It wasn't my favorite by any means. And it seems like a step too far. And like, I felt like you could get the same message across without the like crazy dramatics.
Yeah, those characters didn't really return. It was just a clip show. They just happened to show up for a few seconds. But they didn't really contribute anything except the one line that they had to move the story forward.
And when you think about, and I don't want to spoil any other shows necessarily. So like, I'm just going to briefly talk about the Scrubs finale, or even, you know, 6 Feet Under to some degree. Like, they really knew how to like wrap things up. And I'm not saying that House had to do that. But you know, just like maybe, you know, even ER. I mean, if I talk about ER, like they bring characters back throughout the season and they wrap up old storylines, and they like ER really actually had a pretty decent final season, and they really wrapped things up really well, where they tied things back into the very first episode with all the original characters and all of that. And it felt like House didn't really honor its early seasons, and it really just felt like they introduced this storyline where Wilson gets cancer, and like they introduced that storyline four episodes prior, and then the entire like series finale is wrapping up that four arc storyline, and it didn't really do a service to the rest of the series, I felt.
Yeah, it felt like obviously Wilson's cancer was the driving point behind the events that were leading up to it, but outside of that, it could have been any season finale, really. Like, if that had been a season 6 finale, I don't think anyone really would have batted an eyelid, and that might actually have been a better way to go out. But I remember at the time actually quite liking it, despite what a lot of people were saying, but now that I rewatched it recently, and with the benefit of hindsight, I'm starting to come around to your view, I think. I wonder if it was just quite... It felt like too neat a way of wrapping up things which couldn't really be wrapped up. And
It's funny because I had the exact same opinion. Like, when I was watching it in real time, I was like, why is everyone complaining? Even throughout the entire like last few seasons, I was like, why is everyone complaining? This show is still great. It's still House. He's still being House. And like, I feel like the character of House is why the show still worked after it really went off the rails. But watching it over again, I noticed the flaws in much greater detail. And that's why I have the opinion of it I do now. But I was completely with you before. It was like, I liked it because I liked House, and I liked that things turned out to be okay for him. You know, like I didn't want things to be sad, and I didn't want things to end in a sad way where he's broken and going to rehab at the time. But I think that would have been a stronger ending.
You think that would have been better writing ultimately for that to happen? Because
because
the way it did end, it felt very fan servicey, to the point that I've heard some theories that it was too perfect, and therefore it must have been a hallucination on the part of either House or Wilson, because like, you have House escaping from this burning building in this improbable fashion. He has to fake his own death and the dental records, and then the music at the end before the final song was the music that was playing in the season 5 finale as House was breaking down mentally before he went and committed himself. So yeah, it was Keep Me In Your Heart by Warren Zevon, who knew he was dying from cancer at the time, interestingly. So that I've seen some theories floating around. The showrunner has come out and said that House is alive, so that kind of puts the kibosh on that. But the author is dead. You don't have to listen to what he thinks. You can invent these own theories. But I do wonder that, like, for a season finale, or a series finale, rather, you have a lot of creative freedom to decide what you want to do. Because for House, you know, this can be the one time in the entire 8 seasons that he finally gets his redemption, right? He can finally have this near-death conversion if you want him to. You can wrap this up almost however you want. And I don't know if the way that they chose to end it was the better they could have done, given the amount of choices that they had and given what they were able to do with those characters.
Yeah, I do feel like it could have been much worse. I'll give them that. I feel this was like a safe way to end things. And like, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's not like the ending of like Mass Effect 3 or something where it's just like totally off the rails, or it's not like a like something that's just like gonna completely like piss people off. Like another one of my favorite series is Death Note, which is an anime show which has a similar kind of character, which is this guy who feels like he's smarter than everyone, and he starts killing criminals with this special Death Note, and that has a very bad ending. So I feel like there are much worse ways that the show could have wrapped up, and so I'm glad that they didn't screw it up. But I agree with you that they had so many more interesting options to end the show, and I would have liked to see them try to go for one of those.
If you do take that ending at face value and you don't think it's just some drug-induced fantasy, then is it an impressive sacrifice on House's part? Like, he's making this noble gesture for his friend and his dying moment in his last few months? Or is this just, in keeping with House's character, him just doing what he wants and not caring about the consequences?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It didn't really feel that explored. Like, at the very end of the previous episode is when he finally like, all right, fine, I won't try and force you to live more than 5 months. I'll hang out with you for the next 5 months. And then it's like, this also kind of felt contrived, where it's like, oh, magically, you're going to get sent to prison for 6 months. This is why we're going to have a dramatic ending, because you're going to do something crazy to get out of this. And then it never, like, then we start off the next episode with like, there's a ton of introspection in terms of like, he's talking to himself. He ultimately is going to culminate in some sort of epiphany. But that epiphany was like, I want to live. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to kill my, like, again, they introduced a problem and then solved it within the same episode, instead of resolving some sort of huge arc in terms of like, well, this is finally a decision that House is going to make for the benefit of somebody else, or something along those lines. It was like, well, all of a sudden House wants to kill himself. And then by the end of the episode, nope, I actually want to live. And then that sort of, I don't even know like what the motivation behind like faking his death and being with Wilson, other than like the fact that obviously he wanted that, but like, where did that come from? Like because he wants to live, then he wants to make this sacrifice? And was it a sacrifice? Because it really just felt like, as you mentioned, him getting his way again, like him pulling one over on everyone. Oh, psych, I didn't die, and now I'm gonna get to be with Wilson. And like, honestly, I think if the show were to continue, I think it's like, well, after this, finds some crazy way to get his medical license back, and now he's a doctor again, because I don't know what House does after Wilson dies.
It could just be House and Wilson riding around, you know, solving mysteries, hanging out, doing their thing. But I agree, and you could argue that this was the culmination of this interplay between those two parts of House's character that has been building for 8 seasons now. But equally, it does feel weird that he goes from this one stance at the beginning of the episode to just doing this complete 180 after hallucinating a few times. It just didn't really sit that well. And I almost think that it would have been fitting if, after finally deciding that he wants to live, if then like the ceiling collapses or whatever and he dies, and that's it, that's the end, and there's no there's no easy way out, there's no faking his own death. Like, there is a finality to it that there always has been every other example of death throughout the course of House. Like, we see him talk about the idea of death and the, you know, how stupid he thinks it is to be scared of death so often, that when he finally has to confront his own mortality, it's undermined at the last moments by this plan that he supposedly cooked up behind the scenes that we don't learn about until the last few minutes.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like, and there's a way to do that where it explores that emotion, and I think that like it can work in that way. But instead, they sort of go with the cheap thrill of like, oh my God, is he dead? And then the punchline to the entire episode, which is the finale of the entire series, is psych, he's not dead. Instead of it being like an emotional revelation, it's like, oh, he tricked people. And instead of like exploring how that, what that meant for him or for Wilson, it was just, it was a spectacle. It was him texting Wilson as Wilson's talking at his funeral. And that's really what like gets me. It was like a fake out. Like a fake out should not be the dramatic, denouement to your entire story. That should be when you're like really wrapping things up and explaining and exploring these emotions one last time. But yeah, like instead we get this fake out, and you know, it just didn't like, because when that roof collapses, I don't think they can just end it there. I think it would have been a different episode, because the only reason why they had the roof collapse in the way that they did was so that you could have the payoff of, well, he's not really dead, because wouldn't that suck if we killed him off like that? But I think if you operate that episode in a different way and you explore like these emotions and why House is making the decision he is, and then, you know, coming to that conclusion and then wrapping it up afterward in a way that's like, wow, like, you know, he put himself in that situation, and then, as you mentioned, like the death is so final and connect it to so many of the stories that we'd seen throughout the series, I think that could really work.
Yeah, or you could have, after House dies, that is the trigger for Wilson deciding to make the most of his final few months, or for, yeah, you know, other realizations by other major characters in the show, and that could be the lasting legacy of House, and that could be how he goes out of the show. But instead, it felt like they left things open in a way that was satisfying. Like, I enjoyed seeing House live, I enjoyed seeing Wilson get that text at the funeral, but I don't know if it survives scrutiny in the same way.
Yeah, and I always look at TV shows like this where when that have this problem, where it's like, when you look at a TV show, usually at the start of it, it's a very boring concept, right? Like, it's like, oh, a doctor who's super smart solving medical mysteries. Like, okay, well, where does that go? That doesn't sound like the most interesting thing in the world, but it is, because when you explore it, it's the interesting part is in the details of it. And then when you get to the end of the series, they're like, well, we can't just have him solving medical mysteries. That's too boring. Like, what we need to do is have storylines that look exciting on paper. Like, House, it looks like he dies, but then he doesn't, because he faked his death, and so he gets to spend the next 5 months with his friend who's dying of cancer, which sounds interesting on paper, but when you see it play out, it just doesn't work, because there's not enough detail to it. And again, I feel like this is the same problem that Game of Thrones is having right now, where it's just like, it's like, you know, write it down as fan fiction, and it's like, oh wow, these established characters doing these crazy things is really exciting, but like there's so much more meat to it that you could be getting out, and they're just not.
Yeah, so on that note, I think as we wrap up the series finale of House, we are just about to wrap up this podcast, unless there's anything that you want to get out into the universe before we end this.
I mean, just in general, I feel like I complained a lot about the last few seasons, probably because I just watched them. But I really do love this show, and there are so many moments throughout the show that really stuck with me and shaped who I was. I love the story that House tells about like the doctor that everyone hated but was always right, and that person like inspired him to be who he was, because it didn't matter if he was an asshole, it didn't matter if nobody liked him, because if he was right, then they'd have to listen to him. And that always struck me as something that like was profound to me as a child. If I can just be right, if I can be the best at something, then you know, people will have to listen to what I'm saying. And again, like all of the thought provoking cases and situations that were brought up, I thought were really, really great. And the character of House obviously is the star of the show. And I feel like there aren't many characters with as much depth or, intrigue as that, and who are portrayed so amazingly well. I mean, Hugh Laurie is just so incredible in that role. I really love, the show. And I wanted to like shout out to Chase, who is always my favorite team member. I loved Chase even when he was being a little like tattletale. He was always the most interesting to me, except for maybe Taub. I like Taub a lot as well. But I love that Chase ends up replacing House as head of the department. I felt like that was a very fitting end because he wanted so badly to be House for so long. And I feel like he ultimately does become the sort of fuzzier version of House.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Wilson as well, played majestically by Robert Sean Leonard, who I think the bromance between him and House is one of the main features of the show, one of the main interesting parts of the show, and something which we really haven't touched on that much in the past hour and a half now. But that's always something that kept me interested. And yeah, House was, as a show and as a character, was a very formative influence on me, and not in a good way at all, about, you know, 12 or 13 years ago. And I like to think I've kind of moved past that stage now, but I don't regret that necessarily. And it was always a show which I enjoyed watching. I think it was the first box set that I ever bought, just like the season one, season two DVDs of House, and it will always hold a special place in my heart. And I would not be going to this effort to podcast about it if I didn't like the show and relate to the show on some level and want to talk about it. And I think it is a show which at its best is very thought-provoking, very enjoyable, and as you say, I think the character of House really does stand the test of time, even among all of the other great shows that have come out since then.
Yeah, I mean, despite the many flaws of the show, I still find myself wanting to watch House, you know, do anything, even when he's doing the genre bending things. Like I said, like, even though those storylines were so, you know, cliched, getting to see House interact in those kinds of storylines was great because he's such a good character. And I would love to see him do anything on television. And the reason why I was able to get through 8 seasons of a rewatch was just to see him do the same thing over and over, because he's just so entertaining and so interesting and so well played. I want to see another character like House on TV again.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of doing the same thing over and over, you have some Big Brother to be podcasting about. I have other things to be podcasting about. So we will, and you, I'm sure all you guys have other podcasts to listen to and maybe other non-podcasting things to do with your lives. So we will leave it there for now. But Taron, thank you very much for joining me. This has been a lot of fun, and we'll definitely have you on again sometime to talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So you can be finding Taron on Twitter at Armstrong Taron, very creative. You can be finding me at DomHRV. You can find Colin at Colin Stone as well, because why not? And we will be talking to all of you guys again soon. Take care, everyone.